there'll be a few more people trickling in, but respect that and kick off the meeting. Right, my name is Mark Gamsu. I'm one of the four lay members on the Sheffield Clinical Commissioning Group, and I'm going to chair the meeting this evening. We are due to finish at the latest by 8, and we will finish at 8, if not before. So, first of all, thank you all for coming out on an increasingly, well, it is increasingly cold and wintry night, so the seasons are still working. This is the third of the formal public meetings about proposed changes to urgent care services in Sheffield, and it will provide an opportunity for you, I hope, to hear about the proposals in full and give us your views. We are determined to make sure that there's going to be enough space for you to ask questions, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of those questions. In a moment I'll introduce the panel. I haven't checked this with the panel, but my suspicion is there may be two sort of themes to the questions that are emerging. One will be quite rightly about concerns about the proposals that have been suggested or questions about the proposals. And the other may be to do with people's views about the quality of the consultation that we've done so far. And it'd be really helpful if people have got views to ensure that those are heard. What I suggest is that we start off with questions about the proposals and people's views about the proposals, and then as we move through towards the end, if we can shift to pick up and if people have got concerns about the way in which the consultation has been conducted. The reason I say that is because the consultation doesn't finish for a number of weeks yet, and therefore we're still keen to look at ways in which we can improve and reach out to more people. So that'd be one of the actions that we'll be interested in terms of taking things away from this evening. I hope that doesn't come as a surprise to you, Kate. Okay, let me just tell you who's on the panel. We've got Tim Moorhead, who's the chair of the Clinical Commissioning Group, who's a GP in Sheffield. We've got Brian Hughes, who is Director of Commissioning and Performance, and Kate Gleave, who's Deputy Director in the CCG, in the Clinical Commissioning Group for Strategy and Integration. In a moment, I think, Kate, you're going to kick us off with a presentation. Before we do that, I think many of you may very well be familiar with Voluntary Action Sheffield. Emergency exits are as you go out to the right and the left. Toilets are out to the left. If you need to go, don't worry, just use those. They're out to the left and then left again. The way we're going to do this is Kate will kick off very shortly with a 15-minute presentation about the proposed changes to urgent care. And then after that, it'll be over to you for questions. I will try to make sure that everybody who wants to ask a question or make a point has an opportunity. I would ask you to also respect that, and in terms of trying to keep your points as brief as possible. I think that I've got a couple of other notes here. One is something about if you are a journalist. Are there any journalists here? Right. If you are a journalist and would like a media interview this evening, we'll try our best to fit you in, but only if we have time remaining at the end. Please to speak to someone from our comms team. Hands up, comms team. So at the back, over there, please have a chat with them, and they'll sort that out. And if you've got a personal experience about urgent care that you'd like to discuss with us, could you also please speak with, again, the same two people, Sue and Richard, who raised their hands earlier. So I think the key bit is what we want to hear is people's views about the urgent care proposals, and that may be informed by your personal experience, but the key bit is what do you think about what is being proposed? Okay, that's me done for the moment. Kate, I'll give you I'm sure I won't need to, but I will give you a 3-minute warning in 12 minutes' time.
I'm a bit shorter than everybody else. Hello, my name's Kate. I live in Sheffield. I work in Sheffield and my GP practice is in Sheffield. So what we are proposing tonight is what I think is the best for me as a patient, as well as what I think is best for you as patients in Sheffield. And please bear that in mind when we're going through. Appreciate that everybody has different views and different perspectives and different experiences, and we want to hear from you about how you think these proposals are going to impact on you and your communities and your loved ones and relatives. So, to start with, I thought it might be helpful to describe what we mean by urgent care. So when we talk about urgent care, we are describing the treatment of what we call minor illness and minor injury symptoms that are urgent but not life, limb or sight threatening. So it's things like ear and chest infections, sprains and cuts, and it includes both physical as well as mental health conditions. As you'll see, we've got a number of services within the city currently. We've got GP practices, pharmacists and opticians, as well as dentists, although dentists are outside the scope of what we're talking about tonight. We've got the walk-in centre at Broad Lane. We've got the minor injuries unit at the Royal Hallamshire Hospital. We've got the emergency eye clinic, which is also based at the Royal Hallamshire Hospital. And we've got the out-of-hours GP service, which is based at the Northern General, as well as what we call extended access hubs. So there's four locations in the community where you can go and receive a GP appointment in the evenings and at weekends. So a fair range of services open at different times of day, providing different types of service and for different needs of patients. Thousands and thousands of Sheffield residents have told us over the last couple of years that we need to make urgent care as simple for you to access when you need it quickly as possible. As I said, you know, I live in Sheffield, and there have been occasions in the last year or two where my family's needed urgent care. And if I'm being really honest, I've not always known where to take them. I've known where to look and who to ask to find out the right location for them to go. But it's still, when it happened, I was like, oh, well, hang on, have they got x-rays there? Is it still open? What time does it shut? So if I work in the health service and I'm working on this and find it hard, then I'm sure lots of you find the same situation. You've also told us that improving access to GP appointments, and particularly the urgent appointments, so when you need an appointment on the same day, is often really difficult. We know there are some practices in the city that are doing it really well, but lots and lots of you have told us that it's really hard to get through on the phone, and if and when you can get through on the phone, often the appointments have gone for the day. You've also told us that you want us to make more care available closer to your homes. And you and the providers across the city, so the hospitals and the GP practices, have told us that we should be making best use of the services and of the staff that we've currently got within the city. And we don't think that's happening at the moment. So hopefully you've all seen the consultation documents and had a chance to have a look through those. But we thought it might be helpful just to describe quite simply what we're proposing, because we know there's been some issues and some confusion around what's been reported and what people have understood. So we're proposing four main changes. The first one is to improve the way people access those services. So there's a number of different routes in which you can access services at the moment. What we're proposing in the future is that you would either, in the main, contact your GP practice or ring 111. You would have a conversation. The purpose of the conversation, which would largely be undertaken with a clinician, would be to determine whether you need to be seen by a member of a team that knows you, and whether you need a booked appointment or not, whether there's an alternative service that would be more appropriate for your needs. If you need an urgent same-day appointment, that would be booked for you then and there, so you know when you're going to be seen, who you're going to be seen by, and where. And if actually what you need is some signposting to an alternative service or some advice about how to care for yourself, then you would be given that. So the second change, which I believe is the most fundamental change across the city and will impact on the majority of patients, is the way that patients get those GP appointments. And this is building on the work that that is already taking place in the city. So at the moment, we've talked about the fact that we've got lots of different services. The walk-in centre treats minor illness. We've got the minor injuries unit that treats minor injuries for adults, but not for children. There's a whole range of services. In the future, if you need urgent care for a minor illness and you need to be seen within your practice by a member of the team that knows you, you would continue to be seen in your practice. However, we think that most people, a lot of the time, actually just need to be seen by the right person, and it doesn't matter whether they're seen by somebody that they know or not. And for those patients, they would be offered an appointment within a group of their own local practices. So it's not necessarily in their own practice, and it's not necessarily with a GP. It will be with the clinician that is most appropriate for your health needs on that occasion. We're proposing to change where people would go for minor injuries and also those patients that choose not to be treated within their local practice area. And that's about proposing to replace the current walk-in centre and the minor injuries unit with urgent treatment centres in the city. And I'll talk about that in a little bit more detail in a minute. The last change is to propose a change for where people go, if they've got urgent eye issues. So at the moment, some people go to their GP, some people go to opticians, lots of people go to the emergency eye clinic that runs at the Hallamshire Hospital. We, having had conversations with the clinicians in the city, believe that actually there's lots of the patients that have urgent eye conditions, as opposed to the emergency sight-threatening eye conditions, could be treated in services more locally to them. They don't need to be seen by the hospital, by staff that currently work in the hospital. And so we're proposing to provide that level of service for those patients with urgent eye care needs out in the community, closer to people's homes. There are some things that we're not proposing to do, and I just wanted to run through this because it might help perhaps debunk some myths and some kind of rumours that are going around the city. So we're not proposing to cut or reduce any of the emergency services. We're not planning on making any changes to planned GP appointments. So those appointments when you ring up and say, actually, I'd like to be seen within the week or within 2 weeks or in my practice within 3 weeks. There's no changes to those. We're not proposing to close the emergency eye clinic. That eye clinic would still remain in place for patients with emergency sight-threatening eye conditions. And we're not proposing to make any changes this winter. The proposals, if they go ahead, would be fully implemented by April 2020. Because we think there's a lot of work to do and the magnitude of what we're proposing means we need that time period to do that. So there is no changes to anything that we've got in the city this winter. I haven't put it up there, but we're also not proposing to save money as a result of making these changes. This is about using the money that we've currently got within the system more effectively to provide care more closely to people's homes and in from a quicker perspective when they need it. So this isn't about taking money out of the system and using that outside urgent care. So I mentioned the fact that there's different options for urgent treatment centres. So we've got three options. Our preferred option would be that adults would be seen at the Northern General in the urgent treatment centre, and that would cover both minor illness and minor injuries. And if you're a child, so if you're under 16, you would go to the Children's Hospital. You would be seen at the emergency department if you've got a minor injury, as you are now. But those patients that have a minor illness need would be seen in an urgent treatment centre outside the A&E department, but on the Children's Hospital site. option two would involve the adults being seen at the Northern as option one. The difference there is that children with minor illness would also go to the Northern site. So the only reason you would go anywhere other than the urgent treatment centre at the Northern is if you've got a child with a minor injury, and then they would go to the children's ED. And the third option is very similar to option one. So adults go to the Northern, children go to the children's hospital. The difference there is that if you're an adult with a minor injury, you'd be seen in the emergency department at the Northern. And if you're an illness patient, you would be seen at the urgent treatment centre. So how might it look in the future? I just wanted to kind of share a personal experience before I go into this as a way of perhaps demonstrating what the impact is likely to be. So last year, my daughter developed infected eczema. I rang my practice at 1:50 in the afternoon. We'd been away on holiday. We'd been monitoring it for a day or two. We thought, actually, no, it really is infected eczema. We'd come home that morning. As soon as I got home, I rang the practice to say, please, can I speak to somebody? I was put on hold for 15 minutes because we have one of those systems where, you know, you dial one for urgent appointments. And so I was on hold for 15 minutes. When I got through and I asked to speak to the triage nurse, so I spoke to the receptionist. I said, you know, please, can I speak to the triage nurse? Because that's the way that our practice runs it. I was told that the nurse clinic finished at 2:00. So I'd been sat on hold since 10 to 2. So you can imagine my frustration, particularly as I'd just come back from a holiday. So I asked what I should do because I needed to speak to a clinician, and I was told that I could either ring back tomorrow morning at 8:00 and, you know, go through the process again, or I could go to the walk-in centre. If I felt my need was that urgent, I should go to the walk-in centre that afternoon. You can imagine how frustrated I felt about that. Maybe some of you have had similar experiences. If this was to happen in 2020... I'd be able to ring my practice at 10 to 2 in the afternoon and get through to somebody. I would be able to have that conversation straight away about my issue. And remember, this does already happen in some practices in Sheffield. They would direct me to the right service. And if I needed an appointment that day, then they would offer me one so that I would finish the phone call knowing who I was going to see, where I was going to be seen, and when, with the reassurance that it would be within that 24-hour period. And for most occasions, it would be the same day. They potentially may also choose to ring me back later to check that my condition or my daughter's condition hasn't changed from when I had that first contact. Because we know for some patients, particularly really young children, and sometimes for the elderly, their condition can change quite quickly. And what's appropriate advice at a point in time can sometimes not be appropriate sort of 3 or 4 hours later when the patient's condition has changed. So in those circumstances, we believe, and again, some practices do this now, that having that reassurance that somebody will contact you in a couple of hours to check whether your condition has changed or not will provide patients with a significant level of reassurance. We believe that the proposals that we are consulting on at the moment would mean a far less confusing system for patients and would ensure that patients get the right care with the right clinician the first time they need it. So you're not having to work out, you know, what's open when, is it the right place, where do I go? Actually, by contacting 111 or contacting your practice if it's in working hours, you'll be able to have that conversation and be signposted to the right place straight away. We think by implementing these proposals, we can guarantee that patients who need an urgent appointment can be seen within 24 hours, and for the majority of patients, same day. The reason that the 24 hours is up there and not the same day is that we know that some patients ask or make contact with services at 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night sometimes. And while sometimes it is appropriate for them to be seen overnight, actually often it's more appropriate, you know, they can be seen the next day. So, and that might be a more appropriate use of services within the city to be seen at 8 or 9 o'clock the next morning rather than for them to have to travel across the city overnight. We also think that these proposals, for the majority of people, would mean that care is closer to your home, because we think most people, when you look at the numbers across the city, and no doubt we'll come on to that later on, but the majority of the population, what they want and what they need is an urgent appointment with their local, within their local area. And we think these proposals will enable us to do that. So there is another slide. Okay. Last slide. So obviously we are still in the middle of the consultation. It runs till the 18th of December. This is the second public meeting, not the third, but it's the second time we've been here. So appreciate the confusion. But so this is the second of three public meetings. We have been out talking to lots of people in drop-ins at libraries. We've kind of used lots of community groups. There's about 120 community groups that we've contacted across the city, and we're getting feedback in through those routes, as well as through people completing the questionnaire and either sending it back in hard copy or online. But some of the things that we've heard so far are concerns about travel to the Northern General in particular, and parking at the Northern General, and the impact that these proposals may have on what lots of people, me included, always already recognise is actually often very tricky to park at the Northern. We've had some positive feedback about people saying, yes, they do want urgent care closer to their homes. They would really welcome that. And through the feedback we've had from the questionnaire, the majority of people are saying that they would be happy to go to another practice in their local area if it meant that they had access within 24 hours when they needed it. But clearly that's, you know, we're only partway through the consultation, and we need to keep testing those messages and those themes to see whether that is borne out throughout the entire consultation and across the whole city. So we want to hear your views. Tonight is one way of doing that. There are lots of other ways. There's lots of stuff on social media, online. There's the website. I don't know whether many of people have had a look at it, but there's some information on the website. Health Watch, Save Our NHS. There's lots of organisations out there that have got information on their websites and that are also communicating the information. So we really want to hear what you have to say. There are hard copies on everybody's seats. If you haven't had a chance to fill out the questionnaire yet and you would like to, we would really welcome that. We are going to be capturing all of the feedback from tonight. So everything that people say tonight will be fed into the consultation. But there are some quite specific questions on the questionnaire that we really want to hear people's views from. And there is also space at the bottom for you to share any kind of free text comments that you've got in terms of positive and negative views and concerns.
Where is the questionnaire?
It's on the inside back page of the document. People found it? Yeah. Okay, that's me done for now. Thank you for listening.
Okay, thanks very much, Kate. Jan's second public meeting. And, right, I'm not going to ask you two to say anything. Right. The key bit is to hear people's concerns and allow people to make points. So can I just get a feeling, could I have a show of hands about how many people would actually like to make a point? Good. Only that many? Right, okay. What I suggest is, and I would ask you to just, I think it would be helpful if the points of concerns that we had raised at this stage were to do with the concept, to do with the proposals and queries through the proposals. And if you've got points you want to make about the consultation itself, let's do those in a separate group towards the end of the meeting. Now, what I suggest is that we take comments in sort of points in groups of maybe three. Let's have the hands up again, and I'll... okay, I'm going to... I'll start with you. And I'm going to work my way back, and you, and then you, and I will work. I might change my mind about that, but go. Now, have we got someone with a
microphone?
I'll come to you in the next group.
You can have
nine. Right, okay. Has someone, are we going to go around with a microphone? I think the thing with these microphones is, am I right, is that you need to speak into the top of it, yeah? So can we start over here, please? And I think it's, for some people, you might find it more helpful if you can either hold it or they'll hold it for you. No, you're going to have to speak into the end of it.
I find it interesting that you present three options in setting out under Section 6. And it says, we'd like to know which one you prefer. And every one of those options includes the closure of both the minor injuries unit and the walk-in centre. Now, I'm particularly interested in this. I belong to four U3A groups, and in the last week, in fact, 8 days, I have spoken to over 40 people about these proposals. Now, I accept that I didn't tell them about all the other suggestions, including things like going to another GP practice and contacting your GP practice, but every one of those people signed the petition, the Sheffield Save Our NHS petition, of which I'm sure you're aware. Everyone signed it, including a couple of people who live near the Northern General. And all of them said, but we use the minor injuries unit. It's accessible, it's close to home, and this is one of your criteria, isn't it, that we want people to have access to urgent care close to home, and we want it to be simple and quick, be able to access it quickly. And many of these people said, but we need to get somewhere quickly where we know we can park. And they were very concerned that they did, when I pointed out that the options, because I came across this, your three options in a piece of paper that I picked up somewhere saying, do fill this in, tell us which one you prefer. And this does rather lead me to question whether it is a sincere consultation or whether you have already made up your mind, say, well, we're going to close those anyway, but we'll give them, we'll ask them, they might may not notice that every one of these three includes the closure of both those urgent care facilities. So I'm skeptical about how genuine this consultation is, and I would like your assurance that if you were to get enough evidence of whatever kind from potential patients and so on, that people really do want these two facilities to remain open. Are you willing to keep them open?
Okay, thank you. Now, before we, can we just have the mic ready for the gentleman at the end? So that's the first point. Can I just get a feeling, how many other people here were going to make a similar point? Okay, right, but I don't want to start going into that because you're getting up, right, okay. But there's, right, okay.
Very, very similar. what surprises me is that in regards to urgent care and obviously accessing A&E as an adult, that it's the Northern General. And again, it's very similar to what this lady's saying. When it comes to accessing things closer to home, if someone, it doesn't affect me, so I'm not being selfish in saying this, but if somebody lives up in Low Edges, believe me, it's easier to get to the Royal Hallamshire than the Northern General. Why would you expect an adult to have to trip all the way up to Northern General? You know, I think personally it was a bad idea closing the original A&E unit of the Hampshire down. You know, can you not at least go back to the drawing board and reconsider and think, you know, well, actually, maybe we need to provide A&E and an urgent care centre at both these teaching hospitals.
Okay, thank you. Now, do you want to go ahead? Okay. And then we'll just give you a chance to respond. I think I'm tempted to allow people to continue on the theme of are these three options really, but I think it would be good to actually get a response here, and then you can make a judgment about whether that's something that we need to continue with. Please go.
Access to services. I've used all three of the urgent care services, and I found access to be fantastic. Actually, you know, you can just go there. You can get seen relatively straightforwardly and quite quickly, and I've never found it a problem. So I don't think it is a problem of access, really. I can't see why people. You say that people don't know where to go. Well, you know, I think things are going to be even more confusing if they change that much. So what, you know, wouldn't a better idea be to sort of make it more public? Which services people can use and what each of them are for, you know, and they've been going long enough, and you know, there could have been a lot more publicity about, you know, how to access them, when they're open, what exactly they're for. I'd just like to point out that in your consultation document, there's actually a mistake, because it says that the eye casualty is only open by appointment, and that's not true. You know, you can walk in there any time between, I think it's 8 o'clock and 4:30. So that's a mistake, and it's quite a misleading mistake, really. Another thing is that these ideas aren't really tried and tested. You know, and if you go ahead and close these urgent care services in favour of a reconstituted service, you don't necessarily know that's going to work very well. So, I mean, if you are going to go ahead with anything, I suggest that you first of all, trial it. Don't close the existing things until you've seen that something else is going to work.
Okay.
I've got a couple more points, if that's okay.
Go on, go.
I just wonder where the money for all this extra work for GPs is going to come from. It's a huge amount of work, extra work for them. Who's going to do the speaking to people on the phone and assessing what their needs are? You know, I know when there's something wrong with my eyes that I know what's wrong and I know where I want to go, and I know that my GP hasn't got a clue about dealing with eye problems. You know, the eye casualty is a really, really specialised and very, very good service, and I think anyone who's used it would say the same thing. And I'm concerned about what it actually is that you're proposing to replace it with, because that's not, I couldn't find that anywhere in the document either. I think that's about all I've got to say. And yeah, I mean, I believe that it's going to go to opticians, but I mean, to me, that's another kind of erosion of the NHS if you're going to be handing it out to the private sector.
Okay, so there's a range of points there. I think you probably captured those, but options, how real are the options? Concerns about, I think in particular, it was about the reliance on the Northern General and the impact particularly on the accessibility of the Hallamshire, the Minor Injuries Unit. Also points around, why aren't we just improving what we already have rather than trying something that's not tried and tested, which is in particular replacing it with access around general practice. Mistakes around eye casualty, opening times, and where's the money coming from for extra work for GPs? Okay, so let's wrap. Okay, no. Okay.
Surgery. They only work 2 days. They can't get men. No men are going into being.
Can we just? Okay, I've got it. But there'll be an opportunity for you to come back and with other questions. But I'd rather let's get hear what they have to say, and then we'll continue. But you might want to include the GPs bit.
Okay, I'll have a go at trying to answer some of those questions, and some of them are bound up into kind of one answer. So in terms of the options around the walk-in centre and the minor injuries unit and what we have considered and why is there only three as a kind of a general starting point. So we started with a very, very long list of potential options to develop all of the services going forwards. Off the top of my head, I can't remember how many there were, but there was a very long list. Through discussion with mainly providers, but also reflecting all of the engagement that we have already done with patients and vulnerable groups around the city leading up to this point, we reflected that down to a shortlist of 6 options. And we then undertook an options appraisal. So we considered a number of different factors and evaluated each of the options to score those against each of those. So we weren't looking at just one specific aspect. We considered a range of issues, which included things like care closer to people's homes, whether it enabled the right thing for each patient to be undertaken first time, the feasibility of the different options, from whether it's from a staffing point of view, from an estates point of view, you know, have we got the right buildings, whether each of the options was likely to increase or decrease health inequalities within the city, because we know we've got a significant issue with health inequalities. So we know that in some parts of the city, patients live a lot longer than in other parts of the city. We know that there's a whole range of reasons why that is. We know that we've, because of the, I suppose, the geographical nature of Sheffield, we know that there are geographical inequities. So it's much harder. You know, some parts of the city have to travel a lot further to get into the city centre than others. And that's partly reflected in some of the public transport issues that we've got within the city. So there's a whole range of issues that we looked at. And some of the options scored really highly on individual criteria. But what we wanted with the top three options that scored across the board the highest scores. Because if we looked at location of services and made a judgment about whether citing a service in the city centre was the most important factor, we would then ignore a whole number of other issues, like practically, can we staff the services? What does that mean for patients that can't travel into the city centre? How are we going to address a whole range of other issues? So we had to consider a number of issues. That then ended up with the top three, and those are the three that are being consulted on. Other factors that we had to take into account are that there is now a national requirement that we implement what's called urgent treatment centres within the city. So even if we did nothing else, we would have to look at the minor injuries unit and the walk-in centre and make some decisions about how we were going to convert them, or whether we could afford to convert them, into urgent treatment centres within the city. What we've tried to do as part of this approach is consider what is best for Sheffield and the patients of Sheffield, and how we make those requirements fit. In other areas, they've just gone with, right, so we've been told we need to implement an urgent treatment centre, so how are we going to do it? Fundamentally, what we know is the majority of the issue and most of the reason why, well, the majority of the reasons why people access, particularly the walk-in centre, but also for some patients, the minor injuries unit, is because they can't get an appointment with their GP, or they're confused and they don't know where else to go. And they know that if they pitch up to the walk-in centre or to the minor injuries unit, as long as they pitch up when it's open, they will be seen and treated. So what this proposal is about is identifying the root cause and addressing the root cause of the issue, which is improving access to urgent GP appointments. And if we do that, for the majority of the patients, they won't need to travel across to the Northern General. We know, and we've heard, I've been at drop-in sessions at both Stocksbridge and Crystal Peaks over the last couple of weeks, and people in both locations have said, actually, it's far easier for us to get to the minor injuries unit because of the bus and the tram network than it is to get to the Northern General. So we recognise that. When we've looked at the information of people who are actually using the walk-in centre and the minor injuries unit, the vast majority of patients that access both services travel there by car. So 70% of the patients that use the minor injuries unit travel there by car, not by public transport and not on foot. There is a small proportion that access those services either by bus or by tram or by foot, and clearly moving the service to the Northern General would have an impact on those. And we need to consider that and reflect on how we would address that. But the majority of patients travel by car. In terms of the not tried and tested, and you know, why wouldn't we kind of try and do it small scale first? We know that in areas of the city this is working from a neighbourhood point of view. So from accessing your GP practice and being able to offer that care within 24 hours, we know it's working, and we know there are other areas in the country where this idea of work of practices working together is working and is providing benefits to patients. Part of the way in which we're going to solve the staffing issue and manage the financial arrangements, the investments that we'll need in primary care, is by taking some of the money that we currently spend on the walk-in centre and the minor injuries unit. Clearly, a lot of that money will need to go into funding the urgent treatment centres, but we don't think we'll need to spend all of it on the urgent treatment centres, because what we need to do is get most patients being seen in their local communities. Staffing for, where are the GPs coming from? So, I mean, and Tim will have a view on this, but we are clear from the conversations that we've had with practices and with patients that you don't always need to see a GP. Often, there is another health professional that could be more appropriate to treat your needs. So in lots of areas, mental health is a big issue. And actually, for some patients, it'd be far more appropriate for you to be seen straight away by a mental health professional or somebody that's got some mental health skills and training, than to be seen by a GP and for the GP to then signpost you to the mental health. Similarly, there are lots of patients that need antibiotics or prescriptions, whether that's repeat prescriptions, or ongoing medications, or whether it's actually they've got a urinary tract, a water infection, or they've got a chest infection, and what they just need is some antibiotics. We know that clinical pharmacists, so pharmacists over and above the current level, pharmacists that have had additional training, can see you or listen to you over the phone and prescribe antibiotics. You don't need to be seen by a GP all of the time. And part of this, the practices working together, is about having a range of professionals within that team overseen by the GPs, but the range of professionals being able to see and treat you. And that's partly how we'll manage the workforce issues. The opticians and the eye clinic. Yes, you're right, we did get it wrong. You can walk into the eye clinic, and I think we've noted that, and we've got information out on the website that states that. They are specialists, and they don't need to be seeing the patients that are attending with urgent appointments. They need to be focusing on the patients with emergency sight-threatening loss. That was the original purpose of that clinic, and that is what that clinic is set up for. In effect, we know from the hospital information that we've had conversations, 50% of the patients that use the emergency eye clinic don't have emergency sight-threatening eye needs. They either have what we would describe as urgent eye needs, or actually they have what eye need, things like conjunctivitis that you can self-care for if you've been given appropriate advice. So we think that the proposals that we're making around urgent eye care are about using the specialists that we've got within the city the most effectively, and using other groups of clinicians, like the opticians, who are equally capable of seeing those urgent eye patients and treating them safely, but in much closer to patients' homes and with better range of appointment times. We believe that's more appropriate. I think that's probably everything, but Tim, do you want to add something on kind of GP staffing?
Okay, I think, and Kate, you can disagree with me here. I think what Kate said was there were six options that went through an option appraisal process, and that's why we've ended up with those that are there. So there was a process, and in terms of the scoring that went on with regard to adults, the option that came out strongest was the one that has been presented, although there are three different options for children. Is that a fair representation of what you were saying? So I really can't. I mean, other people need to speak. And Tim,
just very briefly to add to what Kate said about GPs, a couple of things have been raised. One is the number of GPs we've got. There are things going on to try and encourage more people to become GPs, more young doctors who've qualified and are making career choices. They are certainly coming along, but I'm not optimistic there'll be huge numbers of them. That's maybe not going to happen. And we've got to actually make the career more attractive, actually, if we want to attract people into it. One of my young partners in the practice on Monday, we had an unbelievably busy day on Monday, and she was on call, and she was in tears by the end of the day. And you know, we've got to be looking after our workforce, and demand which is just not sustainable is not going to help to recruit people. So we've got to think, and so I think a large part of what this proposal and some of our other proposals are about is making all the services sustainable, not just the general practice service. The other point about the money to help this to happen, well, we haven't got more money to invest. We have to use the money that we have got in the most effective and efficient way that we possibly can. That's not the main driver of the changes we're proposing here, but it does present us with an opportunity if we do think about, instead of just applying a sticking plaster, as Kate said, just opening urgent treatment centres as we've been mandated to do. If we instead look at the system as a whole and think about the way we deploy all our resources, not just the money but the people who are available, that I think is the way forward. And if we use this thing that we call skill mix, in other words, we use nurses, we use pharmacists, we use optometrists, we use a whole range of people to address demand, I think we have a chance of addressing what people need within our envelope, our budget. And you know, in Sheffield we haven't really done this very much, but in other parts of the country they do it a lot, and I actually think we're missing out. Actually, I don't think this is a cost-cutting type exercise. I think we're actually not using the best professionals sometimes to make the best decisions for people. So I think Kate's example of the mental health worker, for example, if you had very rapid access to a mental health worker instead of having to see a GP first, who then sends you to the mental health worker, that seems to me to be a better service for patients.
Okay, thanks. Do you want to, something you want to say, Brian? And then yeah. I want to go back to the audience because we've got lots of people wanting to ask questions.
I just want to add about people were asking about will it make it easier and simpler? The idea, the model that we've come up with, we feel does make it easier and more simpler to access services. And by the time that it's implemented, whatever we choose to implement, we need to make sure the public and the population of Sheffield understand how they access services and where they should be going. So we can't close something before we've done that education and made it clear about how people access the new services we may be setting up.
Right, just a couple of things. I realise it's frustrating because people want to enter into a wider debate, but there's lots of people who wish to speak, and I need to prioritise people who haven't had an opportunity to say something. Frankly, if people are not convinced by some of the arguments that are presented, it's really important that that is recorded in your formal response and when you write things down. And I think that's... So now let's go with another three people. I know you sacrificed your... And then why don't we just chug up that back row? So we'll go to the person behind you after. No, we're going there first, to the woman in the with the grey top, and then I'm going to go pink and black.
The urgent care centres, are they the existing GP centres, but specialists that are being developed then? Are they existing GP centres that will be set up as urgent care centres? I'm not a medical person, so it's... are they just then in the normal GP hours, or are they after hours as well? If they're just in the GP normal hours, then the after hours would be then to the walk-in centre that you're proposing in Northern General, are you? It's really confusing because I use the walk-in centre quite a lot. My daughter is a visitor because she's registered in London as a student. So people who aren't registered in GPs nowadays, you used to be able to get a holiday, you know, and go to your GPs. Now you can't do that. So the only place I can take my daughter, who suffers quite a lot from tonsillitis and various things, is to the GP walk-in centre. And I actually do know how to access things. I phone up my out-of-hours, my GP, who on the out-of-hours, even if it's out-of-hours, will tell me what to do. So I either get some information on the telephone, somebody phones us back, or I go to the walk-in centre, or sometimes I've been to the GP cooperative in the Northern General, but it's miles away. And the walk-in centre is very well used. Northern General, I go as well myself, and it is... The travel concerns about travel. It's not May. There will be no parking spaces if everybody has to converge there. I have to park sometimes in the roads outside, and they're all chock-a-block as well. You cannot get a parking kit. And if everybody from the southwest side of the city have to then travel, and you're saying 70% take their cars, so that's... Or taxis, which is very expensive, especially for the elderly. What about the elderly who don't have cars? And you know, they're relying on other people. They might not have other people. So I actually think it is a bit of a cheek to think that everybody, there's a large amount of areas in the southwest who would have to go with cars and cannot park their cars. You can't park. So how are you going to... That will have to be sorted out.
OK, thank you. I'm going to keep... Okay, I'm going to come to you in the next tranche of questions, actually, because when we go around. But let me... Not at all. But I want to go down. I said that the next two people can ask their questions. So.
I just on about going forward, if I can just bring you back to about 5 years ago, you had the walk-in centre at the Hallamshire Hospital right next to the minor injuries unit, with the out-of-hours GP surgery and doctors underneath. Everything was in the one place. I worked at the walk-in centre at the Hallamshire Hospital, and I've worked at the walk-in centre at Broad Lane, which I don't know whether people here know about it. It's run by a private company. It's NHS funded, but run by a private company. I can see why you had to change it from the original thing, which worked very well. I live, unfortunately, in the south side of Sheffield, and I know where you're going to put them. If you put them at the Hallamshire, at the Northern General Hospital, you're going to try and locate it next to the out of hours. Am I right?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there's no parking for the staff there at the moment, never mind patients. Also, how much are the satellite GP surgeries used at the moment?
Okay, thank you. So there's a real issue about parking, but also questions about the general confusion that's around, which I think was one of the key points that you were making. But can we go back? Yeah.
My question is a genuine, I don't understand what your ideas are for this. What's the idea for homeless people, people who are not registered with GPs, like drug users, who at the moment are accessing city centre services via Broad Lane and would have extreme difficulty for everybody to get them to the Northern General? What are the plans for that? I'm assuming that you've got vulnerable people plans.
Okay.
Or are you having an urgent treatment centre within the city centre?
Okay, thank you. Right, and that is one of the areas I know that the CCG's done some work on. So, you want to have a bash at those three?
Do you want to? We'll start with the issue about the unregistered patients, about...
Yeah.
Yep. Anybody who's not registered in Sheffield, who's perhaps not resident in Sheffield, can use any of the local practices. It's best, obviously, to use the nearest one. And yeah, you can. No, you should. You're definitely allowed to. When the kids come home from university to my practice, they just fill in the form and I see them. So,
no support whatsoever put in place for that.
So a carer or a parent, if it's a child or a guardian, can do all of those things.
I think the point's been made, and Richard has recorded it. And rather than going into trying to get Tim to solve the problem, I'd rather that we record the point and then we move on. And you've made the point forcibly. But I think we need to record it and move on, because there's a range of other issues that they have to respond to here. So, and I think the other bit, and your experience is also, you're saying, hang on a minute, there does seem to be, at the very least, variable practice within general practice in terms of accessibility around registration. And I think, again, Richard is recording all of this, and that gets included in our responses. There's a key issue here which was picked up. I don't know whether you wanted to say anything else, Tim, in terms of that response, because I do think the point that one of the things that was very forcibly expressed, we've heard it already, but it's not surprising it's coming out, is around parking at the Northern General and access. Did you want to say anything else, Tim, before?
Just briefly on the homeless and so on.
Yeah.
I think that point's about the homeless. drug users, other unregistered people. It's my view that urgent care services for these people are probably not appropriate because their problems are so complex. They are really complex. And having 10 minutes with a doctor who's never met them before isn't really the best thing. We have been looking in a lot of detail about how we do respond to the needs of this extremely complex and vulnerable community, many of whom are in the city centre, but they're not all there, of course. So I don't think that that having urgent treatment centres in the city centre is anything like an adequate response to the needs of this type of population. They really need a specialised. Yeah, they need a specialised and more advanced, if you like, response. There is, but not for 10 minutes with a GP who's never met them, in my view. They need a specialist service, really. One that can reach out to them.
So we've done quite a lot of work with vulnerable groups over the last couple of months, in early 2017. Because the previous work that we'd done around listening to patients, we recognised we hadn't heard from vulnerable groups like the homeless, like patients with alcohol and drug dependencies, like populations from specific parts of Sheffield that have got a lot of deprivation and a lot of issues within them. And so we did some very specific work to understand what their needs were, what their current experiences of accessing urgent care were, and to feed that into and help shape our proposals. So one of the key things that we found that surprised me and others in the organisation was that the homeless and groups of patients with drug and alcohol dependencies particularly were not using the walk-in centre as much as we thought. The main users of the walk-in centre are students and the young working age population. So people between 18 and 30, and when you look at where they live and where they're registered, you can clearly see that they are either students or, we think, city centre workers. We know that patients, homeless patients in particular, were often being signposted to go to the walk-in centre, but the feedback from those individuals was that actually they didn't want to sit and wait. They often didn't feel comfortable talking to a stranger who didn't understand their circumstances and their history and their needs. And therefore, they often might turn up to the walk-in centre but then would leave without being seen. So in terms of what we think we need to provide going forward, and again, some of this work is already started to happen, but we need to build on, is specific services for those groups of the population in the areas where they are congregating, that's it. I was going to say living, but obviously that has a different connotation. So in the areas where they are, and that is potentially tailored to their needs, so that we're not expecting them to pick up the phone and ask for help, because we know, and they've told us, that even if they have access to a mobile phone, which lots of them don't, they often don't have any credit. So they can't use a telephone. So we know that we've got to think about different solutions. And we've already got examples in the city of scenarios where practice staff go out to the drop-in centres and see the patients there rather than expect the patients to come to the practices. In terms of the confusion about what is an urgent treatment centre and the kind of... So I'll try and explain it simply. I think part of the issue is actually, it is all quite complicated. So, as a starting point, if you need to be seen by somebody that knows you, you will be seen in your practice. And that won't change. Other than that, at the moment, it's quite hard to get access to your appointment in a practice, isn't it? So, everybody would like to be seen in a practice. We think that this will ensure that you are seen in a practice. For those patients that don't need to be seen by somebody that they know, you will be offered an appointment within a local area of practices. So that's likely to be, it could be your practice, but it could be the practice down the road. Okay? So that is a combination of using the staff that we've currently got in those practices more efficiently and bringing more staff in, because you're right, just using staff more efficiently isn't going to manage the level of demand that we expect to come back into practices. So for the majority of patients, and what the public of Sheffield is telling us through the completing the questionnaires is, actually what you want is to be seen locally in your practice or in a group of local practices. If you've got a minor injury need, or for whatever reason it's more convenient for you to be seen at the urgent treatment centre rather than in your local practice, then the urgent treatment centre is there. There is a description of it in the consultation document, but basically it's a service that is led by GPs, but again has a multidisciplinary team, so a group of professionals working underneath the GP that's likely to comprise of different types of nurse, potentially some of the other professions we've talked around the pharmacists and the mental health workers. Physios is another one that we recognise that there is some need for. We're proposing under the option one that those urgent treatment centres would be able to see both minor injuries and minor illness for the adults. And they would provide a range of direct access tests, so tests that you can be done then and there. So like, you know, when you go and have your urine tested and it's the dipstick test, pregnancy test, simple tests like that, as well as potentially x-rays if you need it. The urgent treatment centre would be open 365 days of the year and would be open from a walk-in as well as a booked perspective from 8 a.m. in the morning till 11 p.m. at night. Overnight, in that overnight period, we translate into what we call the out-of-hours service, and obviously that currently is based at the Northern General, but the only way you can access that is with a booked appointment after you've gone through the 111 service. Okay, does that help make things a little bit clearer?
I'd like to... What you haven't picked up on, yes, is parking at the Northern General.
Right, so on the basis that the majority of patients are saying they want to be seen in their own local practices, we think that the majority of the population and most of the patients that currently go to the walk-in centre and some of the patients that currently go to the minor injuries unit, because some patients go with illness, not injury needs, we think that the majority of those will prefer to be seen in their local practice. And that's partly why we've asked one of the questions in the consultation about where would you rather be seen? Because if you all turned around and said to us, actually, no, we don't want to be seen in our local area, we want to be seen in the city centre or at an urgent treatment centre, then that changes our thinking, because then parking becomes an absolutely massive issue. At the moment in the city, just to give you some context, about 60,000 patients currently use the walk-in centre in a year, and 18,000 patients currently use the minor injuries unit. That's set against about 600,000 appointments a year that the GPs see for urgent patients, same day appointments. We think, based on our assumptions, and it's beginning to be borne out by the consultation, that most of those 60,000 patients that are currently seen at the walk-in centre would rather be seen in their local practice area. So that leaves a proportion of the 18,000 that would then need to travel to either the minor injuries unit or to the children's hospital, depending on whether they're adults or children.
Okay, right, you made...
And x-ray, very important.
Right, although Kate did talk about the urgent care centre, the ambition, I think you said, was the ambition that there'd be x-rays available in the urgent care centres. I'm reluctant to let Kate answer that, because there's so many people who are waiting to speak, and Richard is clocking it. No, it's fine, it's all right. So I said, right, let's come over here now, and I'm going to... Because I know you've been keen to speak a couple of times. Is there something specific that you'd like to say? You're okay. So, right. Now, what I'd ask is that for people who'd like to speak, I think what would be particularly helpful, because there's been some powerful points made already around options, parking, and so forth, is it would you're welcome to speak about that, but actually, if you've got some other things that haven't been heard yet, then let's hear those, because I think that's really important that we get those out. You got something now. Yeah. Right, so I'll start with you, and then I'm going to come in front, and then I'm going to come over to
I'll
you, Carrie.
I don't need that, thank you. I'll cut but to the chair.
Please.
Right. I'm chair of a patients' participation group in Pittsmoor.
Yep.
We've had a nightmare time trying to recruit full-time GPs, male GPs, and retain them. Most of our patients are English second language speakers. We don't always have an interpreter. One of the things that they're putting out with questionnaires this week is, would patients like to merge with the flower surgery? The flower surgery is on the flower estate. Very few of our people have a car. It's not far if you've got a car, it's 5 minutes, but most of them haven't. And they'd have to have two buses or walk. Also, I don't know how fair it is saying it's a consultation when a lot of these people can't actually read what you're proposing. And a lot of people in this room who are all articulate and intelligent don't understand what the consultation is either.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I'd much rather that people get out their concerns, so thank you. Yeah, and then I'll come to you, Carrie, and then we'll...
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I've got three things, really. First of all, I'm Douglas Johnson, I'm a councillor for City Ward, so I'm particularly concerned about closure of the minor injuries unit and the walk-in centre, just because there's a huge population of people in the city centre, and they don't use it just because it's close by, but also because the demographic means the sort of people who are very often not registered with a GP don't really know where to go when they suddenly find they need urgent care. And you know, it seems to be a very valuable resource. So that's you know, sort of point, really, because I don't think that's really open for consultation, is it, from what I read? I'm sure you've got comments anyway. Second thing is about phone access, because the proposals seem to be based on the idea of changing the triage system once you get through on the phone. But as we all know, the big problem is that people just don't get through on the phone first of all, so you're not even getting into the system. And what I wanted to know is, you sort of hinted at some changes behind the scenes in some way to alter that system. Is there a proposal for what's going to be changed there? And can that be made available to us? The reason for that being important is because if we have confidence that that was going to work, that would make us look at the proposals in a very different way compared to what we know now. Because, you know, if you just can't get through, you know, that's why there's such a need for the walk-in centre and so on. On the other end, if the phone system was going to change things, then people could just get through to their own GPs in the first place, so you probably wouldn't need so much other stuff. And then the third thing is, has any work been done on finding out how people find out where to go to presently? Because, again, that's something that's not referred to in the consultation document. And it doesn't really matter what options people have got if they just have no idea of knowing what those options are in the first place.
Okay, thank you.
So those are three things there. Thank you.
Carrie.
Could you be honest, really honest about this? And I'd like answers from all people on the CCG panel. It was told to me at Firth Park when I went to get information about it, and Kate mentioned it as well. This is driven by a government requirement for urgent treatment centres. Would you really have been reviewing the urgent care treatment in this city if it wasn't a government demand? And I think we all deeply distrust this government, which has underfunded the NHS. Jeremy Hunt, with his idea of junior doctors will work themselves, you know, it's a government demand that is driving this, I believe.
Okay.
So, I mean, I would like, because I used to work for the council and the cuts, you know, come on, let's face it. You are working within something that has been as a directive from central government. Right, that's point one. Point two.
How many points you got, Carrie?
Three or four. No, I'll be quick.
Because seriously, because there's other people. Yeah.
No, okay. But I mean, back in the day, I can't remember when, but there were two A&Es in this city, one at the Hallamshire and one at the Northern General. Yeah. When the A&E was closed at the Hallamshire, there was a huge protest against that. And so people were given the minor injuries unit to kind of compensate for the loss of the A&E. So why is it suddenly that the minor injuries unit is not a good thing? Right, Kate did go on about care close to people's homes, which, yes, I mean, yes, that'd be great if it was really happening, but I don't believe that's the case. I mean, Linda's just said where we are in Pitsmoor, you know, our kind of closer to home would be going 2.5 miles up the road to the flower estate, which obviously, I mean, it's much easier if you have got to travel and can't get an appointment with your own GP. It's much easier to go in public transport or, you know, into town rather than kind of going out. And I also believe, because our surgery, Pitsmoor Surgery, has admitted to us, I'm a member of the patient participation group, and they've admitted to us that 9,000 patients, and they are all English as second language, we're in a poor area, so the kind of levels of illness and poor health are very high. They've had to go, they cannot cope, they've had to go on a kind of massive triage system whereby all, you know, there's 8 extra lines in and out, phone lines, I mean. So a lot of the diagnosis is by triage, but I mean, hell, we are going to miss diagnosis of early conditions of cancer, of mental health, of all kinds of conditions that cannot be picked up on the phone. And I am really apprehensive that there are a lot more people who are going to be further down the line with cancers, with serious conditions that are not being picked up on the phone.
Okay, thank you. Right. Let me just get a feed, a show. I'll let you come back. Can I just say a couple of things, first of all? Clearly this is concerning, and people are rightly concerned and worried about the proposals and about future of urgent care. But this is a consultation. People can express strong views. It's not, but I would really ask, and I'm not commenting on any particular speaker, and certainly not the last one, Carrie, but let's not make it a personal argument between the three people who are sitting on the panel who are doing their best to share. I realise I'm just saying that, right? Keep going. So, over to you.
Okay, so the question that I'd like to answer is the direct one about, is it a government demand to create urgent treatment centres? There's a government direction, or an NHS England direction, which starts to try and look at integrated urgent care, which actually fits with the proposals that we are trying to do as a city anyway.
Brian, when did that come out?
April of this year.
Okay, and how long has the CCG been working on urgent care? I mean, you weren't with us, actually.
No.
So we wrote the strategy back in, that was published in May 2016. Initial work on developing the options started back end of 2016. I came into post and started the work in February, March 2017. And then the national guidance came out at the end of April 2017.
Okay, and in fact, that's your history. I suspect Tim would say that the work had probably started in 2015 in terms of talking about it. So, I mean, that, again, people, you know, you are, that's in response, I think, particularly, Carrie, to your question about is this led by the government? And actually, the government stuff comes after the concerns that were happening in the city a couple of years. Well, we can only say, give a view, right? People can choose not to believe it. Right, and that's okay, that's your entitlement, but we can only share a view about this is our view. That was in response to that question. I'd like to go back and let them continue answering the questions. Let's do that and then go on.
So,
we need to know the facts.
Well,
and I can't believe that in April the government, in inverted commas, just decided
without wishing to get into the detail of how this government or any of the previous governments operate, a lot of what was published in April was news that we had not considered and factored in. I can wholeheartedly say that my approach, because I have led on the development of this work, working with lots of clinicians and patients and providers from around the city, has been what do we need that is best for Sheffield? Where there are national requirements and directives, we will fit those in to what we need to do in Sheffield. I am not going to put my name to something that is based on must be done national requirements that I believe is wrong for Sheffield.
Go back to your list of questions, because we had a range of points that were made there.
Oh, yeah.
And then we've got a whole bunch of points that were made by Douglas to start with as well.
I think, yes, the point about missing diagnoses on the phone, there's only a proportion of conversations you can have over the phone which you can definitely be confident they're safe, and you have to constantly have a margin of error so that some people will actually have to be seen face-to-face, and actually, once you've done that, you realise that perhaps that wasn't necessary after all, but you still have to have that margin of error. The practices that are doing this in the city work in that way, and most GPs now do some sort of consultations on the phone, and you always have to have that margin of error. Of course, if we are in a do-nothing situation and we carry on just overwhelming the services we have now, which I believe there is a danger of us doing, then we'll miss all kinds of not just early and subtle things, but some really obvious things. So I think that, again, I go back to the thing that the do-nothing option is a really poor choice in my view.
So I'll try and pick up some of your points. So in terms of the phone access in particular, because I think, it's one of the issues that have been raised in other forums as well. So number one, we know that the phone doesn't work for everyone, and that we need to be flexible around how we manage that. And we have been quite deliberate around the use of some of our language, in that it is phone 111, because at the moment that is the only way to access 111, although that is changing. And next year you will be able to access 111 through an online platform as well. But that we say that it's contact GP practices, not just phone, because for some patients, being able to go in and speak to somebody face-to-face is far more appropriate for them in order to manage that conversation. Phone access is a problem at the moment in lots of practices, but again, we know that there are some practices that have put additional phone lines in that do not have an issue with people getting through, and that there is somebody on the end of the phone. So we know that it can be done, but we also know that for many practices that currently presents a challenge, and we are in the process of talking to those practices about what and how they are going to overcome that. And that's both from a practical, actually, how many more phone lines do we need to have, as well as a who's going to answer the phone and how are those people, how are we going to get enough staff to answer the phones quickly. So those are ongoing conversations based on the learning that we've got from within Sheffield about how it's working currently.
Okay.
We have already said something about people who are not registered, but it's come up again, and I'm just reflecting on that, and it shouldn't be happening. The rule has not changed about unregistered patients, and when students come back to my practice, they come and see me if they need to, and that's how it should be. So I would like, not now, but after the meeting or at your convenience, if you would contact me at the CCG with some specific examples, I would like to follow that up.
Okay, now, were you going to say something? Because the one bit that, which is, at one level, which is a concern, because it's to do with, just the point about the merger. We can't comment directly on the proposal about merger. Was it the practice in Pittsmoor and the one in on the Flower Estate? But obviously there's an issue there in terms of the proposals here are about a stable primary care service in the city. And I know it's not your area of responsibility, Brian, but in terms of the process that the clinical commissioning group goes through when practices say we want to merge, are you able to briefly outline that? Or maybe Tim can? Otherwise, it's down to me. But I'm trying to be the sort of... If you're looking a bit flummoxed there... Right, I'm quite happy to have a bash at it, but Kate, if you think you really know...
So I think that there is a very long process to go through for any practice to choose to merge with another practice, and it requires CCG approval in order to do that, and alongside NHS England. Yeah.
And I sit on the Primary Care Commissioning Committee, and one of the things, it's happened on a number of occasions, and there are a number of things that have to be looked at, and that includes... access. Access is one of the key things, and particularly as you have said eloquently, one of the key issues there is actually around recognising that for some people, particularly those who may not have access to their own transport and so forth, it's really important to take account of that, and that is one of a range of factors that are considered by the CCG before any, even in principle, agreement is given to practices considering merger. I really want to move on, right? But if you want to talk, I'll be around afterwards. But now, who hasn't spoken? Right, we're getting there. Let's go one, two, and then Judy, and then I'll come to you next. Right, as short, as brief as possible, and please, if there are points that have been made already, I'd really suggest that you focus on another one. But go on.
I just wanted to ask about when Kate mentioned about going to pharmacists for help. We can't do that because my husband's on warfarin, so we always get told to go see doctor. And you can't always get in the same day. Yes, they have a drop in on a morning, but if it's just for a cough or cold, which sometimes it is, we don't want to then go to GP to waste a GP's time over a cough or a cold. But the pharmacist always tells us we've got to go to GP because of the medication. So it's a case of where would we go
right. for things like that. Right, that's a really helpful test. And the test is, which you're going to answer in a minute, is will, using that case as an example, will things be better in the new proposed, in the proposed system? Thank you. could you use the mic?
So a couple of things I want to say, that a couple of things do work really well. I've found 111 can work really well. I've found where my surgery is Shoreham Street. I think we're starting to be linked with a hub with the Sloanes, and that's very, very good. So I think these new hubs have the potential to be very good. I don't feel so concerned for myself personally about Broad Lane closing, but I really do value highly minor injuries and the eye casualty. I use both of them. I value them very highly, and I do feel very resistant about the prospect that all the care might have to be delivered at the Northern General, which I share all the other concerns. Very difficult place to get to, and I probably wouldn't drive, but I find it very difficult to get to.
Thank you. Judy.
Where GPs are to be grouped together, do you have information about the likely location?
Okay, thanks. Right, so we've got some sharp questions there. By the way, that group there, exemplary in terms of short questions and to the point. Right, no negotiating. Who's going to go first? Right, okay.
Yeah, I think...
See if you can replicate them as well in terms of giving crisp answers.
Pharmacists are actually really good at giving advice when a problem is simple. They are really good at that. And unfortunately, at the moment, we underuse their expertise. So if we could have more people with those simpler problems being seen in that way, then there would be a better opportunity for people with more complex problems to see the GP or some other... somebody else with pharmacy expertise. So it's a question of the right people being seen by the right person at the right time and in the right place.
I just want to push you a bit on that. Did you feel that answered your point? Just give us a yes.
Not really. You don't know where if the chemist can't do it.
Yeah. Okay, so the bit is I don't know, Tim, when you were talking about that particular example, without getting into too much detail about your partner, but whether you were saying that his problem was a complex one or a simple one, what were you saying there, in your view?
So this example is a complex problem, and I think it's appropriate. If somebody's on warfarin, they probably do need to see the doctor. You could possibly have a properly qualified pharmacist advice, but it probably needs to be the doctor pretty much every time.
Right, thanks. So it's about... Okay, thank you.
So the middle question... pretty much summed up the purpose of a consultation and why we are asking the public. So there are aspects of what currently works that you would like to see more of, like the hub model and practices working together, and the bits of 111 that do work, and how do we connect that firmly into the local service so people can get to where they need to. But the third bit about the MIU and the walk-in centre and the appropriateness of those is why we're at the eye casualty is why we want to keep the eye casualty open to deal with those sight-threatening illnesses that do affect it, but that the MIU would be seen as the urgent treatment centre and seen in a more appropriate way. But that's the purpose of a consultation, to canvass those views about, are we making the right assumptions or not?
Okay, thanks. And then who's responding to Judy's? Yeah.
So the likely location of the GP neighbourhoods. So the short answer is yes and no. So we've already got the practices working in groups. So we can tell you the geographical boundaries of where you could be seen. And there are some maps out on the out and about on the seats. And we've had some feedback about how we can prepare those maps a bit more in more of a user-friendly way. So, yeah. So at a high level, you can see the geographical boundary. In terms of specifically which practice you would be seen at and when, and whether that would vary, that's part of the conversation that we're having with the practices at the moment, as part of an ongoing conversation that we would have been having anyway. But obviously, clearly, we're also talking specifically from an urgent care point of view. The other thing that I just wanted to pick up on, because it does partly reference something else that we've talked about, travel between practices and the difficulties of accessing. It might be 2 miles down the road, but actually it's 2 bus journeys, or it takes a stupid amount of time because of the way the bus structure is structured in Sheffield. We have looked at the journey time by car and by bus from every practice to every other practice in the city. And we have grouped that by neighbourhoods, so by the local groupings of GP practices. So we know that there are some groups of GPs where, because of the geographical spread, travel is going to be difficult. And we know that there are lots of areas where actually travel is quite easy. We've also looked at travel from all the practices to the minor injuries unit and to the Northern General by bus and by car. So we understand the difference in journey length. And for the bus times, we've also started looking at the number of buses that you're going to have to take to get from one place to the other place and the frequency of those buses. And bizarrely, it looks like often you might be able to get a direct bus to the minor injuries unit from wherever you live in the city, but there's 1 an hour. The frequency of the bus journeys to the Northern, and this is a generalisation, but in general, are going far more frequently, but might take longer. So part of the conversation that prompted internally was, which would you rather do? And there was a whole range of issues. And again, that's something that we need to have more conversations with you guys about.
Okay, thank you. Now, yes, I said I'd come to you two next. And then, Howard, are you still wanting to ask a question? And then I'll come to Howard, and then we'll work back. And I wonder whether I should... No, I'll let you in, Mike, before the meeting ends. Right, with the purple scarf, can we have a mic?
It's proposed that a GP could say, well, you can go to another practice. But the point is, how can a GP from another practice say, yes, I will see them, if they are fully booked with their own patients?
Okay, thank you. They will answer that. No, did you want to? Yeah.
Mine's really a suggestion, and perhaps a question in it. on page 9 of the glossary, it says accident in emergency. Can I suggest that you put things in terms of symptoms rather than diagnostics? We're not all doctors, we don't know. If you've fallen and hurt your leg, you don't know whether you sprained it or broken it. So, to say, go there if you've done this based on a diagnosis, it's asking for problems. And I think if you don't make it clear to people where they should go based on their symptoms, just everybody's going to go to A&E.
That's really helpful. And in fact, there was at least one other person earlier said, look, you've got to be better at how you communicate.
Yeah. And the other thing I noticed, that when Kate was talking earlier on, you're talking about seeing a clinician, seeing a GP, not about listening to have a conversation on the phone. Most people, and Kate did it herself, she didn't say, I phoned 111. She said, I phoned the doctor to get an appointment to see the doctor. Most of us, I think, would much rather see somebody face to face than have a conversation on a phone. And I think if that you're making this, sometimes you're making it a two-stage. You phone up, then you go and see a GP practice, then they might send you to the hospital. And it might be all right if you've got something relatively minor, or you know what it is and you want a prescription. But if you think you don't know what it is, you think it might be life-threatening, you're just going to say, well, I can't be bothered with this lot. Taxi to A&E. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Right, and Howard, and then we'll go back to the panel.
Hi there. Yeah, it's a bit related to the last question, and it's about A&E, which I know is outside the scope of this. But if you get this right, my guess is that many people will not go to A&E. They will go to their local service. Is there some mechanism whereby the funding which currently goes to A&E could be ploughed back into local services should that happen?
Right. Okay. Who's going to go first then?
So shall I take the first one, which was about ringing a practice and a neighbouring practice seeing you? That's about the concept that we've got about GPs working and practices working in a neighbourhood. So if we can almost pool that capacity to create the right level of who needs to see what we're trying to make sure is that we've got enough capacity across a group of practices that can see both the routine patients and anyone that is urgent. So not everybody would see either just urgent or just routine. They will work together, and it isn't necessarily just a GP that would see you. It's seeing the right clinician at the right time. So be that a pharmacist or a specialist nurse or a mental health nurse. So it's about trying to pick that bit up.
Okay. Who's next? Kate?
So in answer to Howard's question, yes, absolutely. There is a mechanism to plough the money back in, and we are looking at doing exactly that.
Okay. Now, have we picked up on all of the points? There was a point made about communication, but I think we've noted that and accepted that that's something that's got to be got right. Next lot. Can I have a show? We're working our way through, yeah? You just put your hand up again. I didn't pick you up before.
At some point, could I please have an answer to my two questions which have not been answered?
I'll come back to that. Yes. I thought we'd addressed all of your questions, but...
No, you haven't.
Right, okay. Right, sorry. Okay, let's go with you, and then we'll have, yeah, you there sitting patiently, and I'm going to come to Mike in a minute, but and then you in the middle, immediate person sort of behind you to the right. So
I'm here.
No, sorry, we've got this guy first.
I go first. Okay, hi, I'm Ben from Healthwatch Sheffield. We've spoken to a few different people, and most of the topics have been talked about by other people and brought up already. One of the things that hasn't been mentioned was we spoke to people about the use of the walk-in centre, particularly students and young people, in terms of sexual health. And, well, is there what's going to happen with the sexual health clinic in the Hallamshire? Is there going to be more patients going there and then more resources being sent there as a result? Or is that going to be swamped with too many people and not be able to cope?
Thank you. Your turn.
I'm here on behalf of the patient participation group at the surgery that I go to in Greystones tonight. I'd like to just make a comment, first of all. I feel at the moment that the big issue, and it certainly is in our area, is about the closure of the walk-in centre and the minor injuries unit, which is what a lot of people have been saying here. And I think what we feel is that at the moment, it's very clear that you want to close these centres. It is completely unclear about how you are going to provide the alternative services. So there is a lot of uncertainty around it because we've got lots of general statements coming out about where services perhaps are going to be, what GPs are going to be. It's not clear what is going to happen. That's the first thing. The second thing, if I can just... Kate shared an individual experience. I'll just share one with you, if I may. On the overnight, on the 4th of November, I became ill. I have a condition, sometimes emerges, and I need to get treatment urgently. 8 o'clock on Sunday morning, I was at the walk-in centre. 8:30, I was seen by a doctor. 10 o'clock, when the shops opened, I got my medication, and I was okay. I haven't heard anything tonight that's going to improve on that quality of service. And to me, That's what the walk-in centre's about. When my GP's open, it's an excellent GP's, and I would go to them. When it's not, I can go quickly to the walk-in centre. I've known this for years. I've used it for years. I'm still, you know, recovering from the loss of A&E at the Hallamshire. But I'm not hearing, really, from you how that service is going to be maintained in the way that I think a lot of people use the walk-in centre.
Okay, thank you. And it's helpful, actually, that personal example is helpful, just as with yours before. And I'm sure Tim would like to give a response to that in a moment. But, yeah, please.
It's not a lot more than we've heard. It's clarification. Are we actually being consulted at all on the closure of these units? Because I think a lot of people think that's what we've come about. And sitting here, when the lady said about minor injuries being a very good service, are you listening or not? Because there's nothing in those three options. In fact, those three options, the first one is the only viable one. Why would we change children to the Northern General? Why would we put urgent care into accident and emergency where we're trying to keep people out of? So the second and third options are inferior to the first one, which is your preferred option. I couldn't fill in that questionnaire because I feel strongly about not closing the minor injuries, and there's nothing on there. This sounds very cynical, but we can all do questionnaires to slant things. And that questionnaire that we fill in the end is slanted all to do with getting the GP services closer at hand.
Thank you. Right.
So now, clarification.
No, thank you. The one thing I would say, because I do feel, two things. First of all, I would fill in the questionnaire, not least because of the question 8, which is any further comments or concerns. And frankly, the concern that you've said there needs to be writ large, and people need to get that. So I would urge you to fill that in, because that's where you make that point. And frankly, if you don't think there's enough space there, put in an extra piece of paper with it. Right, and the second bit about is it worth making it, right? Now, you can make a judgment about the honesty of people here, right? But actually, at the end, and I don't mean this to sound trite, because this is the reality, after the 18th of December, people need to make a judgment about whether the CCG has been genuine in its consultation in terms of the response it makes to the points and whether it actually considers and looks at, proposes changing its plans in the light of some of the points that have been heard, which have been sometimes positive, as a number of people have said, about some of the suggestions, and some where people have expressed real concern. But frankly, until that period, I don't think anything that people will say here cannot give you a guarantee, because it'll just be words. We will listen, we are genuine. So,
can I just add a word to that, Mark,
yeah,
which is that, just take you right back, although the feeling in the room has been quite strong, particularly about these two units, the place we started from was the public telling us how confusing it is. So we are going to have to go away and take these two messages back, which are more or less conflicting, and really scratch our heads and try and add that up.
Yeah. So we will let people come in, but let's just get the rest of them questions answered.
So the first one was around the impact on sexual health services, and that will need to be factored in terms of any impact on the consultation. So we will capture that as part of it to make sure that any impact would be addressed as a result of it. Second one is all about, we'll get to clarification of what does it mean, but is it a genuine consultation? My view as sort of the responsible director for it is absolutely. We had to come out after listening to people with a preferred option. But what we are doing through this consultation is listening to what the feedback to that. And as Mark says, post the 18th of December, all that will be gathered back. And whatever those views are will need to be reflected in, therefore, the decision that we make. And Mark, you fulfil a role on the CCG as a lay member that will provide that challenge back to us so that it isn't done in a darkened room. We've already made the decision before we go out, and therefore our option one is the only one that we're going to do. The purpose of being here and being in previous conversations and what happens over the next 20 days until it closes, or how many days it is to get that feedback in, and we will reflect on that.
Now, does someone want to comment? There was a very specific example Yeah. Do you want to just sort of comment? Okay, if this was to happen, how would that be better than what already exists?
Yeah, so I think it was a really helpful illustration of how you clearly do know how to use the system as it's set up at the moment, and you found a way of making it work for you, and I think that's fine. I would hope that in future, if you have a long-term condition, as it sounds as though you do, which sometimes has exacerbations, number one is you have a plan for that, known as care planning, and you actually have a plan. And if you can have some medication or whatever you need in available, this can't always work, but in many conditions it can work. And if you know how to manage your condition, and it sounds like you do, then you won't actually necessarily need to consult with anyone at all. At the time it worsens, you can get on and use the treatment when you know how to do that. And many people can handle their condition in that way. If you haven't actually got the medication that you need available, hopefully through the practices working together and the availability of local practices, and in particular, if we can make it so that people who need continuity of care, as you may do, can access their own practice, then I think the proposed system will be better for that. Still, there'll be the problem at weekends and so on, but we still will have our urgent treatment centres and other arrangements which ought to be able to cope with that. So I think that the future arrangement should be, if anything, slightly better, but I accept that you might have a little bit of hesitancy about changing from a system you know well already to one that is a proposal at this stage.
Okay. Can I please have another show of hands? And I'm going to go to Mike, because you're sitting on your own here, the only person on this side waiting to speak. So I'll go Mike, and then I'll go, you in the green scarf, and then who else wanted to say something? And I'll come to you next. Actually, let's do all four, because there's only four people left. So you've already spoken there, Julie, but I will come back if there's time. Mike first, then the woman with the green scarf on, and then the two women behind.
Thanks. Mike Simkin, Sheffield Saviour NHS. I've got every sympathy for what you're ultimately trying to achieve, which is improved services in the community, closer to home, preventive, all the rest. But I don't think the way you've gone about it is at all helpful. You talk about making things simple, but actually, as people have said, first of all, if you're unwell, you have to sort out, is it life-threatening, sight-threatening, limb-threatening or not? Is it a minor injury or is it a minor illness? Then you have to make a phone call. Then you probably have to be directed to somewhere, even in your neighbourhood, that you might not ever have been to before. I don't call that particularly simple. Secondly, optioned appraisals. There's a fair amount of scepticism about option appraisals in the NHS, about their being constructed to give you the answer that you want. And I think we're seeing some of that in the hospital review as well. And that's why you've come up with three identical options. Why? Well, I'm actually more confused than I was at the beginning, because I've heard two phrases, urgent treatment centre and urgent care centre. Now, my understanding was that urgent care centres might be things that are in neighbourhoods. I don't know. But is, when you've, the thing that Kate was, you were talking about a few minutes ago, which would be staffed by different people, were you talking about the Northern General Unit, or were you talking about something in a neighbourhood? Thirdly, I feel, well, we've heard about specialist services being broken up, the Minor Injuries Unit and the Eye Clinic. And the Eye Clinic, 60 to 70% of that is, you say, is not sight-threatening, but it is a specialist unit. And we know that demand for eye treatment is going up, not least because older people have more eye conditions. Why isn't this being done in this, in a proper plan for improving eye treatment for the city, rather than breaking up a specialist unit and in effect handing it over to private operators in the community? The last point is really about fantasy. I mean, I feel we're being led along a yellow brick road to some wonderful Oz world of primary care. when in fact we keep being told, and we know from our experience, that primary care is in desperate crisis. Why are GPs coming up to us in when we're petitioning, saying, we agree with you? Why are we expected to believe that you can deliver all the services that you plan when, according to a document that went to one of your committees today, in South Yorkshire and Bassett Law, you need to recruit 100 GPs a year for the to make up the appropriate skill mix, when, according to other figures that you've got in Sheffield, we actually have fewer nurses per head than anywhere else in South Yorkshire, and many of them are nearing retirement age. Where is this wonderful service going to come from? And I think that's the point that the lady from Greystones was making. You're asking us to accept closure and change of valued services for a future that we haven't, well, certainly I don't have the confidence that you can deliver.
Okay.
Yes, one of my points is a bit similar. Keep talking about urgent treatment centres, and in fact there's just one for adults. So it's not centres, plural, there's one. So we don't get any choice about where it is, and it's the other side of the city from everybody here, so we'd be travelling a long way. Great idea to be able to phone up and be signposted to services. We could have a service now where you phone up when you're signposted to the right service with the services we've got and we like. And those of us who know how to use it can go ahead and use it, and people who don't can get the right information. So that's a great idea. We just don't need to have all the change alongside it. And the other point I wanted to make was minor injuries are minor, but they often need x-rays. So are we going to have to, like, a service that's local that can say, yes, this is just a sprain or this is a break and you need an x-ray? It's a long way to go to find out those things.
Okay. And finally, I think there's one more person who was sitting. Oh, yes, that's right. There's two more people, aren't there? Yeah.
My point is following on about the minor injuries unit, a personal experience I had. I was misinformed by my GP practice, in fact, and told to go to the Northern General with an ankle injury that I'd put up with for a little while, hoping it was a sprain, but it turned out to be a cracked ankle bone. And I was told clearly when I inquired, when I was told that I had to go to the Northern General, no, you can't go to the Hallamshire Minor Injuries Unit. They don't do x-rays. But I found out that that wasn't the case. And so my point is, accurate and basic publicity consistent with the care that's in place is essential. And urgent care, incidentally, wasn't in the glossary at the back of this glossy booklet.
Okay, thank you. And we've got one more point, I think, that to be made. But yeah.
Yeah, it's probably an emphasis of a point that's already been made, but I'm the last person, so
Go for it.
And it's about the closure of the minor injuries service. I'm involved in Sheffield Saver NHS as well, so I've been helping with your consultation by informing the population. And the response we've been getting is certainly that it's a very popular service. Lots and lots of people are very knowledgeable about that service, have got a history of using it, and you know, they've had a lot of success there. So, our feeling is that that's a service which should be kept open. If there's confusion about minor injuries, minor illness, well, my understanding is the nurse practitioners that work there are generally trained in minor illness. So there doesn't seem to need to be that confusion. Again, you use the word treatment centres when it seems to me that, you know, actually you're just saying there's one, which is at the Northern General. Where is the service for people in the city centre and on that side of town that is easily accessible for minor injuries. I think there should be, it's a big enough city to have both those services. And then secondly, in terms of increased community provision, just there needs to be a lot more evidence, a lot more costing, a lot more clarity about the services that are going to be provided in the community. I think that's right. People want those services. That's a positive thing for people, but it's not, you know, it's not concrete in the consultation at all.
Okay.
And people are going to object to services being closed if there's no concrete provision as part of the same consultation. It should be there, transparent for people.
Right. Now, okay, so there's a number of things here. Actually, I just wonder, not in the sequence, but I do wonder whether the first thing is, can we just be clarify this point about urgent care centres, urgent treatment centres, and the availability of X-ray in particular? Because that's, can we just be really, yeah, let's start with that, and then we'll move into the other ones.
Okay, so this is partly why the government has introduced the concept of urgent treatment centres, because around the country you do have urgent treatment centres, urgent care centres, walk-in centres, and there's a whole number of acronyms and names used that mean different things in different locations, but sometimes they also mean the same thing. And it's part of an approach to get rid of the confusion. So going forwards, the terminology that should consistently being used, and we are learning to get used to the new terminology, is urgent treatment centres.
And tell us how many of them we're going to have proposal.
Within this proposal, we will potentially have, if we go with option one, I would say that there would be two in the city, one for adults at the Northern and one for children's at the Children's Hospital. Okay. Clearly, if we go with option two, then there would only be one in the city, and that would be at the Northern, because the children with minor illness would go to the Northern service. And that may be part of the confusion, in that depending on which option you're talking about, depends on whether we're describing it as one or two in the city.
And can you say, has the current minor injury service got X-ray facilities there?
The current minor injuries unit does have X-ray facilities.
Okay, right. So we're just getting clarification, right? So people are hearing what Kate has said. That's, I think, can we move on to the other points? I'm aware that there are a couple of people who want to come back. I know you want, there are, yeah. Got eight, 9 minutes left. We are finishing at eight.
So we've heard the comment about transparent plans and the fact that there is not enough detail in the consultation to provide people with confidence about what we're proposing and how we're actually going to deliver that. So we've heard that a number of times, not least about 3 hours ago today. So it's welcome to hear that again tonight. And we have already started a conversation internally about what and how we could provide additional information during the rest of the consultation period to provide you with some of that.
I'd have to say, I mean, again, I think to some degree, Kate is damned if she does and damned if she doesn't. If there's detailed plans, then people will say, well, you're already planning to do this, actually. So, you know, that proves we were right all along. We shouldn't have trusted you. And as Kate, what I would say is, Kate has identified a two-year period, if this was to go ahead, am I right, 2 years? 2020. So anyway, keep going.
So in terms of the minor injury unit, yes, we know it's really popular. We've heard that loud and clear. We've been hearing that for a very long time. However, we also know that some of the patients that use the minor injuries unit go there because what they've got is illness, and they, for whatever reason, whether it's because they can't access their practice or because it's convenient for them or because they know they can park there, there is a proportion of patients that are attending with illnesses, not injuries. And part of the way that we think that we can simplify the services within Sheffield is to provide an urgent treatment centre service that does both. So you're not having to make that differentiation if you're not sure, and you don't have to if you don't want to ring somebody up to ask where to go. You can choose to go to one treatment centre if you're an adult in the city, and you will access both of those services. I talked about the options appraisal kind of fairly early on in the consultation, and the fact that we started with a short list of six options.
some of those six options included locating them in the city centre. They were in the shortlist and they did not make the top three. The reason they didn't make the top three, and from memory, 12 different people scored these options, which included GPs who work within the city. We had commissioner representatives, we had practice staff, and we also had a GP that does not work in the city and does not know anything about the local services as a kind of an external independent person. The consensus was that having the minor injuries and the walk-in centre located at the Northern General and at the Children's Hospital rather than in the city centre provided more benefits from a better use of staffing point of view in terms of being able to use the staff that currently work in. So at the moment we've got two centres, and actually if you bring those staff into largely one centre from an adult perspective and one centre from a children's point of view, you've got a better coverage of the illness and the injury conditions, but you don't need as many staff when you combine those two services together as when you've got them separated out. And so some of the staff that currently work in the minor injuries and particularly in the walk-in centre, we think we would redeploy to working in the local groups of GP practice, because that's part of how we staff, how we find those additional staff. Because I don't think we picked up on it earlier, but the fact that the issue around staffing is a big one, and we know that we need to do something about that. There's a whole load of other information on page 9 in the consultation document about the options appraisal and the criteria that we use. And I could go on and on and on.
Yeah. Right. OK. Now, Tim wants to say something. In what you're saying, Tim. OK, go on.
It's a really quick point. Mike raised, and somebody else raised, the thing, this idea that you can't make your own diagnosis before you decide where you go. And what we're proposing is complicated, but that exists now. So that's not a new problem for me. I think actually the new system is slightly easier to navigate, but I think those points are well made. At the same time.
Now, Mike's main point, which I don't think we can, I suspect you can't answer, is that in a climate of vicious government cuts, how can we have any faith that actually, and particularly the problems faced in primary care, how can we have any faith that this system is actually going to be possible to create this system? I don't know if that's a fair summary, Mike, but...
Yeah, Mike's fantasy point. And, Well, we are where we are. We can sit and wring our hands, but I don't think that's the CCG being responsible. We have got to cope with the demand in the city. We have got to cope with people's illnesses. It would be great if somebody could come up with 100 GPs a year for the next 5 years, but if it doesn't happen, and we've still got to cope. So this is currently our best thinking. We're putting it in front of you, and I have to say I do appreciate your thinking as well in feeding into this. We have to sort it out together. Imagining that 100 GPs are just going to come down from Mars or something is really, I agree with you, Mike, it's fantasy.
Okay,
we can't plan in an unreal way.
Now, I promised, Brian, I know you've got, if you can, in 1 minute, just remind us of your 2 points. I'm sorry, you said you had 2 points that weren't addressed. Okay, now you're holding the mic.
Yeah. Can I do that in more than one word?
I prefer one word.
Well, no. Anyway, let's not get into debate about the number of words.
This
is
a consultation.
We've all got to go home. Listening. Sorry, I was talking over you. Say that again.
Sorry, this is a consultation. We are listening.
No, I can't have. But
okay, sorry.
No, but the judgment has to be, I think, in 3 or 4 weeks, when all the views that have come in and people continue to get those views in, people say, "Well, was that point heard?" They can say what they like now. The nature of the NHS is people move. Judy, you can have the last question as you keep putting your hand up.
So they refuse to answer, in other words.
No, that's not fair. That's not fair.
Yes,
actually.
I think it would be useful to know that, because there are two sets of views, a lot of people have told you it's confusing. People here say they want to keep some things. What happens next when you've completed this stage in the consultation? So I think that might give people more confidence about what you're trying to do.
Okay.
So at the end of the consultation, well, in fact, every week, all of the information that is being fed back to us through all of these conversations and the questionnaires is being sent directly to an independent company who are reviewing all of the information. At the end of the process, they will provide us with a report which will comprise of the results of the questionnaires plus all of the kind of key themes that have been fed back through the conversations that we've been having. We will review that. That will go to the Primary Care Commissioning Committee in February. So that will be a meeting that is held in public. And people will be able to access that document if they so wish to do that. We will need to consider and review the information and the recommendations that come out of that report as part of a final decision. That decision will be taken, we expect that decision to be taken in March. Again, and that decision will go through the Primary Care Commissioning Committee, which will be in public.
So what's really important, and the points that have been made about communication, but I'm sure with the help of HealthWatch and others, is that people know when those discussions are happening. They happen in public, and it'd be really important, I think, for people who are concerned about this, that they, if they're able to, that they're able to attend. I'd like to thank everybody for coming out this evening, and sincere, you know, seriously, thank you very much for the challenges that you've brought back into this. It's actually really important. And thank you to the panel. All right. People are going now, but go on.